Over $150 billion. In 3 days, that's how much the world's 15 largest cryptocurrencies lost in market value. It's because of the crypto exchange platform FTX. The fall of FTX has sent shockwaves through the cryptocurrency industry. So, what went wrong?
What went wrong? The same thing that always goes wrong. But nobody, not the Wall Street Journal or Forbes or Kiplinger's or CNBC, will tell you. But I will. FTX was a house of cards, and the dealers were grifting imbeciles. And all the pundits and Wall Street wizards are singing the same song, the lyrics of which are...
It's complicated.
Bullshit.
That's my British gal pal, Matilda, and she is never wrong. It's not complicated at all. The corkscrew timeline of FTX's rise and fall may look tricky, but the underpinnings of scams are not. Scammers, big-time scammers, use some basic and highly effective methods to scam. Once you're familiar with them, and you will be by the end of this episode, you will be unscammable.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry!
Larry, fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
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 Come on, Larry. Larry.
History repeats, doesn't it? With alarming regularity. And people never change. Their essence, their behaviors, what makes them tick, are no different now than they were 5,000 years ago. Which is really funny when hand-wringing people whine in response to the newest calamity. Whether war, famine, economic collapse, they cry,
how could this happen?
And the answer is always the same. How could it not? People are fallible and will always fuck things up. The only new wrinkle is that when they should blame themselves for the wars and famines and market crashes, they don't. But now when there's a hurricane, suddenly it's the fault of mankind. There's always another war, another boogeyman, someone to hate, someone to venerate, until we discover they're really a scumbag or the media tells us they are. It's insane. 1 minute Musk is a planet-saving hero, the next, he's a fascist fuck. JFK was practically canonized after he was assassinated. They could not paint his name on things fast enough. New York's Idlewild Airport became JFK International. Florida's Cape Canaveral. The entire town was officially rechristened Cape Kennedy. Then one day in 1973, only 10 years later, one thin decade, it was quietly renamed Cape Canaveral. How'd that happen? Sure, they still call the Rocket Depot the Kennedy Space Center, but why did the city decide to scrap the Kennedy name? The answer is, people are fickle and stupid. One day there's a parade in your honor, the next they're handing you a blindfold for the firing squad. Remember Michael Avenatti? Just a few years ago, every teleprompter-reading, hard-charging, fact-finding journo was cheering him on to run for president. He was just sentenced to 14 years in the slammer for stealing millions from his clients, including the infamous Stormy Daniels. Just listen to this cavalcade of fawning smooth brains, beginning with Anna Navarro, who compares Avenatti to the Holy Spirit.
Lately, to me, you're like the Holy Spirit.
He's Donald Trump's worst nightmare, Michael Avenatti.
Joining us once again is Michael Avenatti.
Let's bring in Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti. Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti, thank you very much.
He's out there saving the country.
Don Meacham says he may be the savior of the republic.
You are something of a folk hero now.
I owe Michael Avenatti an apology. I've been saying enough already, Michael. I've seen you everywhere. What do you have left to say? I was wrong, brother. You have a lot to say. I am just dying to hear what you think.
These people all like you.
I'm the only person right here Donald Trump fears more than Robert Mueller.
We think you guys are the tip of the spear that's going to take down Donald Trump.
Michael Avenatti is a beast.
Okay, that's true.
And
he's a beast.
He's a beast.
I hand it to her, and I hand it to Michael Avenatti.
But he has a bigger calling here, that being a lawyer is minimal compared to what he's doing.
No one has talked tougher directly to Donald Trump on TV than Michael Avenatti. And Donald Trump is afraid to mention his name.
That's fascinating.
Donald Trump is terrified of Michael Avenatti.
He gives Trump a run for his money more than anybody else, Michael Avenatti.
An existential threat to the Trump presidency.
The Democrats could learn something for you. You are messing with Trump a lot more than they are.
He has no doubt created sheer panic in Donald Trump's very fragile mind.
Michael Avenatti is laying down the law as guest co-host. And is he really thinking about running for president?
One reason why I'm taking you seriously as a contender is because of your presence on cable news.
You look at the field of Democrats right now, and Avenatti's the one who stands out.
If they decide they value a fighter most,
yes,
people would be foolish to underestimate Michael Avenatti.
I have always said that they need a fighter.
Look, I mean, we're going to continue to use the media. I think we've used it with great success.
All of my sexual fantasies involve handcuffs.
Oh, and since this is audio, let me help you match some faces to voices. Bill Maher.
Moron!
Rachel Maddow.
Moron!
Joy Behar.
Moron!
Anderson Cooper.
Moron!
Lawrence O'Donnell.
Moron!
Joey Scarborough.
Moron!
Stephen Colbert.
Moron!
Brian Stetler.
Moron!
And that was Mikey at the end talking handcuffs. Yeah. His sexual horizons may expand after 14 years in prison. He may be swinging a purse by the time he's released. The public also has a really short memory, and it's faulty as hell, as proven by the Mandela effect, huh? That thing where people accept as fact notions that are completely false because why? Why do they do that? Who knows? Millions believe that Willie died in prison in the 1980s, when in fact, he died in 2013 and had been a free man for decades. They also think that the Monopoly man wears a monocle, and Curious George has a tail, and Chartreuse is pink when it's actually green. But nobody really gives a shit about that stuff. But everybody cares about money. Everybody takes money damn seriously. Yet, they get clipped by clowns on a regular basis, don't they? It was only 2008 when Bernie Madoff conned thousands of people out of billions of dollars. And among the victims were some very rich and famous people. Jeffrey Katzenberg, Elie Wiesel, Steven Spielberg, Kevin Bacon, John Malkovich, and others. There were several suicides among the scammed. A hedge fund manager named Charles Murphy jumped to his death when he learned Madoff had clipped him for $50 million. A French billionaire also killed himself over his billion-dollar loss. Maybe it was his only billion. Bernie claimed to consistently kick Wall Street's ass with his magic
split-strike conversion strategy.
What the fuck was that? Sounds like a bowling maneuver. In a way, it was. Madoff used it to knock down one sucker after another. To his victims, split-strike conversion probably sounded every bit as cool and mysterious as Doc Brown's flux capacitor time travel technology. Did anyone understand his split-strike conversion strategy or question it if they didn't? Fuck no. Nobody wants to look dumb. Imagine all those suckers nodding their heads knowingly and smirking like they had a mouthful of filet as Bernie whispered his split-strike conversion strategy. Which brings us around to the core mission of this episode. How do really good con artists do what they do? And how can you spot them early and avoid disaster? Well, number one, of course, is they appeal to greed. The French suicide guy was already a billionaire when he invested with Madoff, but hey, who couldn't use an extra billion or two? Katzenberg allegedly lost $15 million, but he was worth a multiple of that amount. But greed alone is not enough to fleece a mark. Next is ego, especially when clipping high net worth individuals. Shrinking violets do not get rich. You gotta have elbows. And you have to not just like yourself, you have to be pretty sure you're a demigod, a master of the universe, or even the supreme being. If the ultra-wealthy doubt their own divinity on the way up, by the time their net worth has 8 or more zeros after it, they'll be certain. Don't people love to kiss rich asses? Yes, they do. And if they don't, they'll learn to love it for a price. Madoff stroked his victims' egos in several ways. A classic part of Bernie's con was the "you're in the club" wink with the secret double-squeeze handshake. People of all ages and mental capacities just love that shit. It's what keeps enrollment high in Ivy League schools and snooty golf clubs, huh? When my kids were tiny tots and I needed them to do something like take a bath or go to sleep or put on a seatbelt, you know, mundane stuff, my go-to gambit was the conspiracy. All I had to do was whisper, "Don't tell Mom." And they were all in. People love to feel as if they're getting over on other people, getting away with something, one-upping them. That's the underlying appeal of everything from the Masons to Mensa to the Mafia. Made guys in La Cosa Nostra do not call themselves good fellas. That happened because of a copyright issue. What they call themselves, with no small sense of pride, is wise guys. They don't punch a clock for slave wages like regular citizens. They live large through criminal enterprise. Of course, many wind up dead or jailed. And it's no accident that convicts refer to non-criminals as citizens. Madoff never ran any ads in newspapers guaranteeing outsized returns to investors. It was all done through word of mouth. And with his Ponzi scheme, he would occasionally pay off investors with big returns, few of whom could keep their ecstatic mouths shut. They'd tell a friend, and soon people were begging Madoff to take their money and make them rich. Or richer. One of the greatest Wall Street guys of all time was the totally legit Peter Lynch. He ran a fund called Magellan, and he made a lot of people very wealthy. His fund would consistently throw off 20% a year or more, year in and out, and when you compound those numbers, boom. Lynch wrote a best-selling book called One Up on Wall Street, in which he divulged the principles by which he managed the Magellan Fund, and topping that list was avoiding what he called whisper stocks. The ones guys dare not speak too loudly, just like the tout at the racetrack who whispers the name of the sure thing horse. Same scam, different levels of money. Madoff urged his big investors to keep quiet about their relationship with him. That's a simple ploy that worked very well. Do you broadcast the location of that can't-miss secret fishing hole? Hell no. It's a maneuver that plays well with everyone from school kids to corporate titans. The secret decoder ring, the drugs bought on the Silk Road. As that Dobie Gray hit song went, "I'm in with the in crowd. I know what the in crowd knows." Layering on top of the ego stroke is the fact that no matter what people say, most are seduced by elitism. They take smug delight in that first-class seat, or all-access pass, or membership in Wingfoot, or the AMG Mercedes. Look at me. I'm special, and you're not. Being in on a sure thing comes from the same place. Madoff's scam was also supported by the con man's best friend, a carefully crafted appearance to give the impression of a rock-solid enterprise. You know, that too-big-to-fail bullshit. Madoff looked the part. the finest suits and shoes, televangelist hair, the gravitas of age, sumptuous homes, and most importantly, a client list of world-beating movers and shakers, movie stars, moguls, big-name politicians. The halo effect is strong.
If it's good enough for Spielberg,
blah, blah, blah. Everyone was not fooled, though. Some seasoned Wall Street guys knew the gains Madoff claimed had to be fake. Some firms refused to do business with him because they suspected he was a fraud. Finally, a forensic accountant named Harry Markopoulos proved it mathematically impossible to achieve the gains Madoff claimed to deliver and reported him to the SEC. That was almost 10 years before this shit hit the fan. Those mouth-breathing government bureaucrats paid a call on Bernie and found no malfeasance. Years later, at his trial, Madoff said, quote, "I was astonished. They never even looked at my stock records. If you're looking at a Ponzi scheme, it's the first thing you do," unquote. Madoff was the con artist to the boomers. Now we have this Sam Bankman-Fried guy. Is he the Madoff to the millennials? Looks that way. At this time, he's still living it up in the Bahamas in his $40 million penthouse condo. Nobody can figure out why he isn't already in handcuffs. But his story might be way nuttier than Madoff's and paint his investors as exponentially bigger rubes than Bernie's. Madoff was at least pretending to be trading in stocks. Shares of corporations have intrinsic value. If Amazon goes tits up tomorrow, there are square miles of tangible assets that could be sold to pay off stockholders. Fleets of trucks and massive warehouses and so on. What's the price of one FTT token? Right now, it's $1.44. In March, that token would have cost almost $52. Notice I did not use the words value or worth, because in fact, right now those tokens are worthless, just as worthless as U.S. dollars, which have been worthless ever since Nixon abolished the gold standard back in 1971. Paper currency is pretend money. Just ask any Venezuelan. Underscoring its worthlessness is how many businesses now refuse to accept cash. So crypto fans do have a point when they argue that it's all fiat money, whether on paper or blockchain bits and bytes. But still, there's nothing to liquidate, is there? Sam Bankman. You can't make these names up. They happen too frequently to be happenstance. I mean, someone is definitely playing a cosmic joke. Madoff. Bankman. Come on. Except Bankman looks like he should be wearing a clown suit and loitering around the arcade at the bus depot. But he's the perfect archetype for someone to bamboozle an array of investors from all demographics in this current age. The boomers and Gen Xers thought,
"Whoa, look at that guy in his Beavis and Butthead outfits. He looks really stupid, so he must be smart. One of those idiot savants. Besides, Tom Brady would never steer me wrong. He's a patriot. I'll have my portfolio manager send him some money right after this episode of One Tree Hill."
Millennials see him and think,
"Hey, he's one of us. He looks like shit, and so does his creepy as fuck poly girlfriend. I'll Venmo him my life savings as soon as I finish this game on Twitch."
Everything about Sam Bankman-Fried is a red flag, from his wardrobe to his appearance to his name. Hyphenated names are a red flag. They're a form of man or woman spreading. Taking up as much real estate on a page with your own moniker is pretentious. But then, Bankman-Fried seems kind of schizo. Were he to play the name game out fully, would he not be Samuel Bankman-Fried? Maybe even toss in an initial or two. His title, though, that may soon have a hyphen. founder-felon. Earlier this year, Bloomberg estimated his net worth at $26 billion. By October, that had shrunk to $10 billion. By November 8, he was down to $990 million. 3 days later, Bloomberg said Sammy had no material wealth. Nada, Zilch said. But still, he's ensconced in a $40 million penthouse in the Bahamas, which, until recently, had a live-in psychiatrist to dispense stimulants. He lived there with eight others in what was termed a polycule, which it seems is some type of ongoing clusterfuck. Swingers in hoodies and cargo shorts. Cementing Bankman-Fried's status as an imbecile is his status as the second largest single donor to Joey's 2020 campaign, over $5 million. He gifted $40 million to Democratic candidates in the recent midterms. Wonder if all those powerful politicians he helped will remember that when he's on trial. Madoff was a big, big donor to many powerful politicians, and when he went down, they went into radio silence. Madoff kept his scam going for nearly four decades. Sammy's empire rose and fell in the time it takes to cook a pot roast. And many of his investors may die broke if they don't first die of embarrassment. So to recap, there is an acronym that can render you unscammable. For gearheads, it's a snap. When any financial decision doesn't pass the sniff test, think Hemi. Yeah, same as the Mopar muscle motor. And let it power you away from danger. H is for halo effect. Do they trumpet celebutard endorsers or investors? That's a red flag. Anyone can go from rich and famous to broke and infamous in a matter of hours. Like Bankman. E is for ego. Is part of the sales pitch designed to make you feel hip, slick, and cool, like you're in with the in crowd? If so, run. The oldest billionaire alive is probably Warren Buffett. Can you think of anyone less cool than he? When Buffett bought Berkshire Hathaway in 1980, a single share cost $275. Today, that share costs $466,000. M. M is for magic. There is no magic. Anyone with a magic formula like
split-strike conversion strategy
is full of shit. I is for if. If it seems too good to be true, it's shit. If they whisper anything at any time, it's shit. If they cannot explain the investment in a single sentence, it's shit. There's your Hemi-powered acronym that makes you unscammable. Now, of course, if pointy women are involved, all bets are off. That's when acronyms and logic go out the window. Self-styled experts love to make things unnecessarily complex. When the mortgage meltdown happened in 2008, the bullshit machine went into overdrive as they spun the arrow on the game board villain selector. When the arrow stopped, the teleprompter readers were braying about tricky financial instruments few could understand. Credit default swaps, collateralized debt obligation subsectors, yada yada. But the designated bad guys were predatory lenders. Hey, that phrase has a familiar ring. That's what all the fuckballs demanding we pay their student loans are screaming about. Newsflash. Other than mom and dad, all lenders and loans are predatory. That's how it works. The real bad guys in the meltdown were the politicians, from Bonobo faced Bush on down. They decided everyone, regardless of their financial resources, deserved the American dream of home ownership. So they lowered the bar for lending to the sub-basement, and banks jumped in with both feet, giving away money to people who could not possibly carry the loans because they knew that ultimately government, in the form of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, would be on the hook for the bad debt. And that's how it happened. Same as Joey and government caused the current inflation and recession. Destroy businesses with unnecessary lockdowns and then print trillions to give away as relief. Joey and Sam Bankman-Fried have a lot in common. They're both
morons!
Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Since this episode is about investments, I'm glad you've invested this time with me. Visit thatlarryshow.com and find hundreds more episodes and extra content and commentary. And while you're there, why not invest in this show? Click the Patreon or PayPal button and help me keep it going. There's also a P.O. Box address that will accept cash, checks, and just about anything. My friends, con artists infest the financial sector, but they operate in all walks of life, even romance. Beware. Keep that Hemi motor running and your foot on the gas. Now, next Wednesday is a very special day and a special episode for this show. Our 6th birthday party. Hell of a milestone. Well over 400 episodes, hundreds of hours of content, a sweeping depth and breadth of topics. It will be fun. Come hang with me as we celebrate that 6th birthday and coast into Christmas. Until that time, take no shit.